Hi, this is Jay Nemro, and you're listening to The Life Autistic, which is episode 607. And I don't know what to call this. It's called The Trouble with Kids. The Trouble with Kids. See, that makes it sound bad. I guess in a way I'm going to kind of make it sound bad. But not to say that I don't love my children, but other relationships are of more importance. And that sounds bad. I know that sounds bad to our cultural sensibilities, because we are child-centered. We're a child-centered culture. And I will talk about that, and about why I think that, to a degree, that's a bad thing to be. So I'm gonna challenge you, I guess. I'm gonna challenge you, and I'm gonna give you something to think about. Okay. Let's get started. Let me tell you about a circumstance, and I've never been able to quite tell this story the way I want to. It just, I don't know if it's a bad analogy or what. But let me go ahead and tell you the story to kind of give a preface to what I'm talking about. In the last episode, of course, I talked about the joys of I really do want to step back from the whole term of marriage. Because it's getting murky these days, and the actual act of being married isn't as important as being the husband to your wife, and the wife being a good wife to her husband. You know, we've tied that up and called it marriage, but I want to make sure that we do what it's essentially supposed to be doing. Anyway, so I'm sorry, I'm supposed to be talking about kids here. But I gotta stick in my jabs whatever I can about being a good husband and being a good wife. Gotta stick it in there. Okay. Here's the story. I used to work on a boat, and this has nothing to do with the work I was doing there. We had free time. When the equipment was operating well, we had lots of free time. And we tried to be really good at what we did, therefore our equipment operated well a lot. Sometimes we were terribly busy, and the job was hard. But other times, it was just kind of smooth sailing, and everything was working okay, and no problems. So anyway, during one of these no problems things, we would speak on lots of topics, the philosophical, stuff like that. Anyway, so my friend, well, he was he my supervisor? Yeah, kind of. Sort of. I always have sort of supervisors when it gets right down to it. Anyway, he came up with this scenario, because I guess we had been talking about what I'm talking about here, you know, marriage, family, children, stuff like that. Let me just preface this by saying that he was in the midst of his, I think, second marriage. I'm pretty sure it was his second and not his third. He had kids from his previous marriage, whom he loved dearly. Good dad. He was a good man. I will never say anything bad about him, because he was a good guy. He tried, which is fantastic. In a world where so many people don't really try very much, he was trying, and he loved his kids. Anyway, he got remarried to a woman that he loved too. So he set up this scenario. We worked on a boat. You could call it a ship, I guess, but I don't think it's really that size. Boat connotates smaller boat, smaller vessel. Although this one was decent size, I forget the size of it. Pretty large. A work boat. Anyway, let's get to the story, Jay. his scenario was this. He said, okay, let's say you had your child on one hand and your wife on the other hand. And they were hanging over the edge of the boat, and you couldn't pull up both of them. You could only pull up one. And when you pulled up one, you would, of course, drop the other, and they'd go into the drink, and they would die. At least that was the run-up to the story. So this was presented to the group. There was usually five of us. And so it went around the circle to see who was going to do what. All four of the other people said, I love my wife, but I would let her go in favor of the child. You know, the child is the future. The child is part of me. My wife is, although I love my wife, she's not, she isn't flesh and blood to me, I guess. And I'm not saying that all of them had that same view, but each one of them said that they would hold on to their kid. And I was the one that said, no, I would let go of my child, and I would hang on to my wife. And, oh, did I take garbage for that. I took so much, they just gave it to me. It was almost like trying to convince somebody of their ultimate stupidity. And I imagine they saw it that way. And I think that brings to light one very important thing. In our society, children are considered the most important thing. And I'm going to stand by the fact that, and I'm sorry, it's a horrible scenario, and everybody admitted it from the very beginning and said, that's terrible and horrible. Isn't there some way you could save both? And of course, that was one of the rules of the game, was you couldn't do that. I'm not saying that I would rather see my kid die than my wife die. I'm not saying that. What I am saying is that to me, my wife is the preeminent person in our family. And I'll try to explain why, because I know a lot of people out there are just going to be stunned and upset and saying, I can't hear this, and maybe even walk out the door, and I hope you don't. I hope you don't, because we need to expand on this a little bit and help you to see the bigger picture. Because I think once you see that bigger picture, you'll say, oh, okay. And if you are, as most of us are, a product of our culture, our society, maybe you'll change your mind about what society tends to feed us in the way of a good picture. Let me just say one thing about society. While we're sitting here, I think I got this written down. Here it is. It's a society is like the snooty neighbor that is almost always wrong. Have any of you had just kind of a neighbor that liked to interject themselves into everything you do? They always had a comment. They always had a retort where you would say, well, I'm going to do it this way. And she'd go, oh, no, you have to do it this way. And they'd give you a whole litany, a whole laundry basket full of reasons why they were right and you were wrong. But then when it came down to it, they were wrong. It didn't matter how many things were in that laundry basket of reasons why you should do it that way. They were all, they didn't trump truth, reality. And I think I found some truth here that I'm going to share with you. And let's start, and I want you guys to hang with me. I know it's really tempting just to walk away and say, I don't believe anything this guy says. It could be tied to your job. It could be tied to just the way you go about your life. I'm going to maybe poke a hole in it. And I don't want you to be defensive about that, because I think ultimately this will solve a lot of your troubles, a lot of your problems, certainly solve a lot of your kids' troubles and your kids' problems. And like I said before, I'm only 40 years old. I've only been married for 20 years. My oldest daughter, the oldest of the six, is just now turning 18, just now leaving home. And I'm not sure if what I've done to her, for her, I don't know, to my oldest daughter, how it's going to work out. I have hope, I have faith that it was good advice and that it was good knowledge and that it will lead her down a better course than I think society offers. Okay, and here it is. Well, here's where it begins. It isn't like there's just some statement I'm going to add to it. Let's first talk about the way society is. Society is very child-centered. And it comes through in almost every way. Almost every way. We're child-centered. Our society encourages this. I think it's encouraging. People think it's a good idea. And on the surface, it seems good. It seems like the best thing to do. But I will tell you, and in a minute here, I'll describe what I mean by child-centeredness. I think child-centeredness is at the root of the majority of society's problems. And that's funny because we just, and I mean sick funny, not, that wasn't funny, toward, that's interesting given the fact that this is so pervasive in our society. And it is new. It is new. This child-centeredness does not have much of a historical precedent. What I've described before, being a husband, being a wife, that has historical precedent. Over the years, that has been something that has been more talked about, more discussed, more focused on than children. It's only been in the last, who knows, maybe it's 100, maybe it's 150 years. We really started to see child-centeredness. I'd have to say that it may even be just in the last 50 years. Anyway, so let me talk about child-centeredness, and let's try to paint a picture of it, so we can kind of have the same view of it. People in our culture, during this time, are all about their kids. You know, it's all about the future. It's all about what we are giving our kids that we think will make our children happy, will make our children well-adjusted, will maybe we even get to the point of even thinking about preparing them for the future. Although I think that's incorrect. Even though we talk about it, when we actually go through the motions, we don't do very much of that at all. Child-centeredness means, you know, that's the most important thing. You know, I have always been something of a critic of schools, that I think schools are, at their heart, not particularly good places. And the attitudes they tend to instill in everybody that touches them, it tends to be somewhat perverse. Schools have become the major influence in our society, the major influence of life. School is everything. For the first 18 years of our lives, everything in our lives about either preparing for some form of schooling or being in the midst of it. And that in and of itself causes everything to be kind of child-centric. That's probably the first good indicator of child-centeredness, is the fact that we put so much time, effort, thought, money, everything our society and our contributions to society has to offer is poured into these children. Of course, we always say, "Oh, but you know, we're training up our next leaders, stuff like that." And I can only say that I think that it sounds good, but we don't really ever get around to actually doing that. It becomes kind of a cover, kind of a front to what actually ends up going on, which is stretching childhood into infinity, which is bad and wrong, and is, I think, at its very heart, a very basic cause of most of the problems in society. If we could eliminate this one thing, I think it would change our world. It would shake our world so hard, and all of a sudden everything would just get immeasurably better. All of our problems would all of a sudden just kind of start slipping away, you know, as if they're just clouds of smoke or something. They would just disappear. Now you have to understand, okay, I don't want you to think that this is my finished product, this is my finished talk. I'm talking about it here, and I'll probably talk about it many, many times in future episodes, because I'm wanting to get down to the crux of this, to polish this for presentations. Because this is what, when I talk about my affirmations, when I talk about being a speaker, a lecturer, and a writer, I'm doing it the wrong thing. Writer, lecturer, speaker, WLS. When I think about doing that, this is the thing, along with the husband and wife thing, that is going to be what I talk about, what I lecture about, what I write about, predominantly. Okay. And I don't want you to think that I came up with this stuff unique, that I think I'm some kind of giving you some kind of new insight. I'm not. Although I may be kind of putting it forward in kind of a new perspective, these are not new ideas. John Taylor Gatto, who is a celebrated, award-winning teacher, he has since become a very radical, almost anti-teacher. He was the first person from whom I started to start thinking and connecting this whole idea of extended childhood and its destructiveness. And once you see it, and once you start making the connections, you'll see it all around you. You'll see 40-year-old children everywhere. You'll see people that don't even, I mean, they are physically, chronologically adults. You know, they are over 18. And they seem to have some of the trappings of adults. But then, if you look past those few things, you all of a sudden see you just have basically a child that never really became an adult. And we almost seem to kind of praise that. Women are in a... I really don't want to get into that. We can get into that later. That's something that needs to happen. I almost think we need to have that husband and wife talk needs to, of course, come first, because I think it just draws people in. People love to hear that. And then, you know, once you've sweetened them up, then you need to talk about kids, because it's going to be a little bit of hard medicine. And then maybe we'll have even a little bit more hard medicine later about how we've caused this. We let this happen at some point. Now when I talk about we, you know, people talk about the greatest generation. I'll be really honest. That greatest generation of people that came out of World War II, I'm sorry. It was their fault. It was their fault. And I'll be the first ones to say it. We had centuries old traditions of, you know, children should be seen and not heard. Children's biggest thing was supposed to be proving their worth to society so that they might take upon them adult roles. It was about all those things. And our greatest generation, I don't know all the reasons behind it, I really don't, but that's where that was lost. That was where kids were supposed to be kids and stay kids. Now, we've taken it to an unhealthy level as generations have passed, but they became the ones that started it. They were the ones that killed it, so I'm sorry. When you tell me that they're the greatest generation, I'll be the first ones to say they led us down the road to destruction. The generation before them, I think, had their perspective a little more straight. We got a little cockeyed in the 50s and the 60s. Something started going wrong, and then it just perpetuated itself. When you see what happened in the 60s, that was a direct result of kids not really growing up particularly, not taking on adult roles very readily. And you have to take it back to their parents. They didn't do a good job of making this stuff happen. And you can blame it on 50 other things. I would like you to get around me. This whole driving business makes me crazy. The fact that people like tailgating you makes me nuts. I try not to do it either. You have to turn it back on those parents. It may have been the grandparents telling the parents not to do that. You know, I'm not sure if we can blame it specifically on that generation, but that seems to be where it hit. That seems to be where the hatchet fell. So, I am not readily ready to say, oh, aren't they wonderful, aren't they great? Now, I'm not saying there weren't fantastic people there, But that seems to be where it started. And I don't want to attack them. This is a cultural thing. This is not an individual attack. Because you can make some changes now, and they may not have, and it may not have the kind of effect that you hope for until a generation or two has passed beyond you. And that's what I'm hoping for. For me, I'm trying to mitigate the problems that came to me by not passing them on to my children, and that they won't pass it on to their children, and that everything that at least as far as I can have influence, I will strive hard to have that influence, that at least in the generations I can touch, that I try to mitigate those problems as much as I can. No, not mitigate them, stop them. Mitigate means that they're there, and I'm just trying to put a Band-Aid over it. I'm trying to kill it. I'm more of a surgeon. I want to cut it off and throw it away. Okay. Let's talk about this child-centeredness. I know 30-year-olds that spend a lot of time playing video games. I'm not a big fan of video games myself. I think they're a colossal waste of time. They are marketed, or they were marketed originally. I was among the first generation to be touched by video games. Just as an example. So I can tell you the whole progress. They were marketed to children. Youngest children too. You know, these were not marketed initially to teenagers. They were marketed to younger kids, originally. You know, little fun little games that you could play. Pong, Missile Attack, no, that's not what it was called. Defender, although, no, that came later. The first generation was mostly toward young kids. Kids under 14, for instance. You know, this was something that your kids would play with during their off time. And it was interesting to see that first kind of revolution. And we always talk about video game things as revolutions. You know, your company would make $1 billion if they came out with a video game that caught people's fancy. You know, it was an Atari thing at first, and of course everybody had an Atari 2600. Well, after the marketers saw that, now you have to understand that age group doesn't have a lot of money, so you have to kind of talk their parents into it. And that was the way the marketing went back then. You know, this was you know, they had the games, but they also had learning things in there, you know. They had basic math, which was what they were going for. You know, you would try to do that. That's where the first kind of home computer explosion came. It was kind of coming off of video games and coming on to trying to expand that thing. It wasn't just about the kids. It was going to be, you know, something you could keep a checkbook on, something you could keep your recipes on. Things like that. I know about this stuff because I'm one of those weird computer guys. But it was all centered around those things, and that was where the bulk of the money ended up being. You suckered the parents into buying the games, into buying the boxes, and then, of course, once you bought it, your whole point was, well, we have to make this silly thing useful. And they priced the game so that kids, it was actually accessible to kids, you know. It would be under $20 so that kids could do it. Well, then they started finding out that with a little more sophisticated video games, they could get to that sweet spot, kind of the kids between 15 and 18. And you could charge those kids a lot more. They had a lot more disposable money, and you didn't have to sucker so much the parents into it now. Those kids had disposable income and money, and they could get that. That was what really fueled the last part of the home computer revolution, was that whole thing about, you know, now we weren't even trying to market to kiddies anymore. Now it was we're going after this age group. These were actually the kids that started out at with the Atari 2600 as preteens. Now they were coming up and the games were getting more sophisticated, and it was kind of meeting their needs. Well, this kind of continued. As these kids that got sucked into kind of the computer world went on into young adulthood, you started seeing other things pop up. You know, that's when things like CompuServe, The Source, Delphi, information services, which were mostly designed for business, saw this huge new market in these gamers that were getting bigger, so they started going into chat rooms. We started to see mashups between email and gaming started happening. And it took a little bit longer, you know, stuff like that, but you still had this core group. They were in their 20s. And they were bringing this more sophisticated form of gaming. This is when Dungeons & Dragons came up. Now, Dungeons & Dragons was something a little more intense because it couldn't readily be computerized with the equipment they had at the time or with the programming know-how that was had at the time. You needed people who could do that kind of thing. Graphics were pitifully rudimentary, but that wouldn't last. Anyway, so these kids continue to get older and older, and gaming and computers kind of came with them. This we get more and more sophisticated games to the point to where we have really sophisticated, expensive games now. Could you have ever conceptualized video games, for instance? Let's take, like, say, Xbox 360 or PlayStation 3. A video game console that would cost between $500 and $800 just for the console, and each game cost at least $50. Now you could... You could take into account inflation, for instance. You could say, well, you know, prices seem about the same as they were before. And you go, well, maybe. But you also have to take a look and see what the demographic is now for these video game consoles. Remember, back in the days of the Atari 2600, the very first ones, we were going after kiddies. We only started looking at, you know, every once in a while you go to an arcade and you might see some 20-year-old in there with his rolls of quarters taking up a video game for hours on end. But that was rare. That was rare and kind of sick, and you would look at that person and And you'd immediately say, this is a kid that never grew up. This is a kid, you know, this is some kind of a waste. You know, this is the kind of guy that wasn't, that obviously never learned how to shave because they had the weird peach fuzzy beard and mustache. You know, and you could see all that. And it was considered an anomaly. Now these new video game boxes, they don't even market to teens. They're not even there. Not that they don't have some games that are supposed to appeal to kind of the teen mentality, but by and large, these new systems, very expensive ones, and the ones that sell quite well, they are marketed toward young adults. Kind of tending over to older adults. That's kind of what this has wrought. And when you look at it, take a step back like I do, you know, the Zenus in me who says, you know, I'm more of an anthropologist from another country than I am a participant in these things. When you take a step back and you look at it, you start to see the fact that these are children. These are children that just have big numbers. They've had several birthdays, but they're still children. These are these 12-year-olds that are all grown up, but they never got out of it. They're still basically doing the same things they were doing when they were 12. I mean, it's more sophisticated, by golly, you know. Oh, no mere 12-year-old can play these kind of games. And you go, yeah, but you have to understand, adults don't spend their time playing games very much. You know, or at least we didn't used to. Now we do. Child-centeredness. And there's a lot of reasons why we like child-centeredness. Number one, it makes single parents feel better. One doesn't focus upon their failures, the failure of their marriage, their failure of their relationships, whatever it ended up being, that got them children in the first place. One doesn't focus on the failure. Now, I'm not saying that we should, particularly. But we want these people to feel noble, right? So we tell them what a wonderful job they're doing as parents, even though there's only one of them, and they really can't handle all the things that are going on. And we have to put together all these societal props to kind of help fill in these huge gaping holes that come from the fact that a committed, married man and wife are making this happen. The fact that we have all that is really, So we decided that we wanted everybody else to feel better, so we told them, well, it's all about the kids. And can a single parent do just as well for their kids than a married couple? Of course, the answer is no, but we're not allowed to say that anymore. For the sake of the children! That is the very watchword. That is the very crux of the whole matter. That is the very reason why these problems perpetuate and why they're getting bigger, and they will continue to get bigger until we make a big change. And that's the biggest change. We need to stop doing things because of the children. We have become child-centric. We have 40-year-old children that are still at home. The greatest generation is allowed, most of them are passing now or have passed, The greatest generation allowed their children to continue to be childish far past what any generation before would have even begun to consider acceptable. I mean, frankly, the fact that we are okay with 17-year-olds still being in school and not being adults yet would have flummoxed your great-grandparents. Would have just, I mean, it would have been jaw-dropping. The fact that we don't know that is the fact that they are now dead and they can't comment on these things. And they didn't comment on it for the simple reason that it was reality. It always had been reality. It was an unspoken truth. By the time you were 17, you typically had your own business. You were typically out farming and supporting yourself. And you were well on your way to having chosen your wife. By the time you were 20 or 21, you were already in the midst of childbearing and rearing. Because that's what adults were. That was a 20-year-old, that was what they were about. It was rare to have these extended children, mostly college students, to have these, you know, this extended childhood. And I don't want to get weird about college and say that college brings this up. I'm not going to go there right now. But these children are, you know, and our norm keeps going up and going up and going up. People that don't have to support themselves. First it was up to 18, and then after that, you know, college was optional, but it was expected that you were going to be working. You know, that you were going to be supporting yourself. And that, you know, if you wanted to go to college, for the few people that went to college, this would be, you know, this would be handled. You know, there were ways in society that we could handle the fact that there were these weird intellectual people who really basically never got down to having families. Or if they did, it was, you know, it was when they were much older. It was an anomaly. It was weird. And it didn't happen very often. Well, the greatest generation, and you know what's funny about the greatest generation? I think the reason why they were so great is because their parents didn't treat them like this. They didn't let them stay children. Of course, the war helped too. 17-year-olds lying and saying they were 18 so they could go to war. Because why? Because they were essentially adults already. They felt that need to go out and fight for their country. You know, there were kids down to 15, 16, if they thought they could pull it off, if they looked older, they could do it. And they would. They joined up and they did that. Amazing. Amazing thing. If you want to call them the greatest generation because of that, well, that's fine, but go back a generation to how they were taught, how they were raised, how they were brought up. It was not a child-centric society back then. Heck, back then, child abuse was, you know, was off the table. It wasn't there. If there was child abuse, nobody was talking about it. Nobody was concerned about it. And when they finally did start getting weird about child welfare, which is the term, comes from Child Protective Services, everything else. At first it was called child welfare. Those things had to be brought up through animal cruelty laws. Okay, hang on, I got a call here. Let me pull over. Oh, damn it. Pardon me. Didn't mean to swear. Hang on. I'll be right back. Okay, I'm back. Now I gotta try to reconstruct where exactly I was and what exactly I was thinking about and talking about. Oh, God. Was I trashing the greatest generation? Probably. See, and that's... See, I said that this one was going to be hard, that this one was going to be mean, and, you know, people are going to say, oh, Jay, you're calling into question too much the things that we value. And honestly, you know, I'm sorry, the term the greatest generation was concocted by the very people who were a member of it. So they all think they're all this, but you know what? The children of the 60s, the ones that started all the problems, it was their kids. Why? I don't know. All I can point it to is there was a failure at some point. And I think it was the changing of our society and the fact that we all began to think that childhood was so massively important. Let me go ahead and give you just another insight into this, because I experiment on my children. And the reason why I experiment on my children because I have a serious problem with society. I think, like I said, society is like some nosy little neighbor that always comes by and gives you bad advice. And by and large, I have chosen to kind of walk away from society because society is so often wrong. It almost can be relied upon. You could say, well, the people in society say, and I could say, stop, nope, they're wrong. You know, even, and that's not true. Oftentimes, society has some pretty good ideas. But by and large, you can ignore all that. Because when it gets down to very deep issues, it's mostly wrong. I homeschooled my kids. I homeschooled. Lisa homeschooled our kids on and off. I encouraged it. In fact, I think I kind of twisted her arm at the beginning. It's, you know, it's gotten progressively easier over time, I suppose. But our kids were homeschooled. And, of course, everybody gets on to you about the fact that they're not properly socialized. And, honestly, I think that's a pretty crappy idea because other kids have nothing nice to offer your children, trust me, except to suck them into bad ideas and bad habits. I'm not saying that kids can't be a good influence on other kids, but it's so rare it almost can't be taken into account. Anyway, so my kids were homeschooled. Therefore, they felt kind of isolated from other kids their age. And I decided, and my oldest daughter, when she was getting up to the point of being like 13, 14, she was saying, you know, I really want to have some friends. And she said, I don't have anything to talk about with the other kids, because all I talk about is stupid stuff that has no relation to me. Kids talk about what goes on TV, on the latest video game, on how much they hate a certain teacher, you know. And you don't know how much school affects society, how much it infiltrates every little nook and cranny, and the whole culture around school infiltrates that. Until you have a kid that's not a part of it, and then they try to have relationships and interface with people who have been schooled. I should call them well-schooled people, you know, and that's not a compliment at all. You see that huge difference. Well, an inspiration came to me, and I said, you know what, Shayna? Shayna's the name of my oldest daughter. You should cultivate friendships with older people. And I had thought about this in college, and there had been, I had actually done a study or two, I actually read a study or two, and had been a part of a program that was trying to get teens and senior citizens together I forget what the actual reason for it was. I don't even know if it was particularly good or not. And most of these things really failed because, you know, they were trying to get rid of these generational gaps, I guess. And it wasn't working. Well, I decided to do this on my own little level because at my church congregation is full of older people. You know, older people join the church at certain periods of time when I guess a lot of missionary work was going on in our town. And they are now in their 60s, late 60s, 70s and 80s. And hooked her up with a lady who had just turned 80. And they hit it off so famously. Oh, it was amazing. And I'm sure the people that are saying, what's the secret, Jay? How'd you do it? And you go, you know what? I said, you almost have to take your kid out of school to make it something the least bit interesting to them. To be somehow connected to someone older. I'm sorry, I'm starting to think about work things, so I'm getting distracted. I apologize. They have a wonderful relationship, and I encourage my daughter. I said, Shayna, let me tell you about being a teenager. Don't bother being a teenager. I want you to skip straight from childhood right on to trying to be an adult, trying to fill adult roles. And by and large, I've been very, very extremely happy with the result of my little experiment doing this. I'm not sure it's going to work with the next job coming up, but it worked famously with Shayna. Just being somebody who always has her eyes looking into the future, always has in her thought, these are things I have to get good at if I'm going to be a competent adult, and treating those years that we call teenage years as adult in training. You know, she had to go out and get a job. She had to go and had to take on responsibilities. We expected her to be doing things that needed to be done. I started pulling back, both Lisa and I started pulling back on making decisions for our child, for Shayna. She was making those decisions now. She would make those choices. She would do those. Is she going to make mistakes? Sure. But those mistakes are such important learning experiences. Now, there are certain things that you don't want them to learn from experience. That you don't want them to do. You don't want them to learn about the pitfalls of having a child before you're married and before you're willing to make that kind, before you've made the commitment in marriage to commit yourself to childbearing, because it's going to take both of you to do it decently, much less do it well. And so you don't leave those to chance. But those are the important things that you say, you know, I don't want you to go out and experience that and find out for yourself. That's a bad idea. You know, if it's something like, you know, learning that you're a really cruddy cook and that you need to work on this a little bit, now that's something you can learn from experience. You know, you don't want to throw everything at kids, you know. People always tend to go to the extremes. I won't influence my kid at all because I think it's most important that they learn from experience. And you go, you know, there's certain things you shouldn't let experience teach people. because it tends to be a permanent condition. If it's something that's temporary and can be remedied, absolutely, experience is the best teacher. Of course, you don't want to go the other way, and I see plenty of parents kind of gravitating to the two poles on this, of being way too passive and standoffish, and then being so, you know, oh, well, I just feel so bad, my child is making such huge monumental mistakes, you know, big ones, like, you know, I'm all hopped up on drugs now, and I'm addicted to them, and, you know, that parent says, oh, I you know, I really wish they wouldn't have chosen to do that. And you go, why didn't you do anything? Well, I felt like they needed to learn for themselves from experience. And you go, oh, please. There's some things you can do that with and some things you can't. Of course, the flip side of that is being totally authoritative and never giving them any freedom at all and running every last aspect of their life forever, you know? You always see parents trying to extend their influence into young adulthood, you know, and you go, you know what? You got to let go. And is the magic age 18? It's not a bad age. And from what I've been looking at, it may be a little bit late. It may be a little bit late. If you're still exercising a lot of parental control over a 17-year-old, I think you're a candidate for being a really repressive parent, and when they leave home, they're going to go insane. And I've seen the insanity that goes, you know, I'm going to send my kid to college and I'm going to pay for it because it's my parental responsibility. And their kids go and go, ah! Go out there, cover themselves with tattoos, break every rule of decent society that ever was, mostly as a rebellion against their parents that they hate. And you're going, wow, how did you get to that point? I think my kids like me. In fact, I think my kids love me. And it's not because I am passive. You can easily get to that because if your kid wants something and you're constantly giving it to them, that may look a little bit like love, but it's really not. It's a selfish person manipulating you. You know, that you have to think, you know, you have to pick your battles, and you have to look for the future, and you go, is my kid going to learn something from this experience? And you can let them go. You know, you don't want them to get involved in drugs, because drugs is a hard thing to fight back from, and it can really destroy your life. You don't want to do that for those people. But we've gotten to those two extreme degrees. Either we become idiot tyrants, where we just, you know, where we treat our children like untrustworthy criminals up until they're 18, and then we set them loose as if, well, now you're ready, spread your wings, fly. And these people have been in straitjackets for 18 years. They can't fly a bit. They get caught up in all kinds of stupid stuff because, you know, the most titillating, the most interesting, the most fun things are things that are going to get you killed. You know, let's have sex. Well, sex is fun. You know, and you're going, and all of a sudden you've either got some weird disease that's going to kill you, or you've got kids, and you're in no position to be having and raising children. Although, then our social services people will slide in and do the best they can. I used to be one of those. So I can speak authoritatively on that, too. I trained teenagers how to be decent parents. I did it so well that I even got to the point where I encouraged those parents to, after they got married, to have more kids because I thought I trained them pretty darn well. That was cocky of me. That was real cocky. And it was wrong. You know, I may have taught them the mechanics of nutrition and the mechanics of changing diapers and stuff like that well, but that's not parenting. That has nothing to do with parenting. You could hire somebody that didn't even speak the same language as you to do those kinds of things and probably do a better job. Now, parenting is a whole different ball of wax. And you can't just hire anybody off the street to do that stuff. If you do, well, you get what we're what we're getting. No desire to demean those who are in those professions. I do mean to preach repentance to parents who are perpetuating childishness forever. When you see a 40-year-old man who's spending the bulk of his time playing video games or on the internet, these are two things that arise from the teen culture. That's why I told my daughter to skip being a teenager. Just because most of the things that society thinks you should be doing as a teenager, you're going to have to seek therapy for later, or seek some kind of recovery from it. The whole sowing your wild oats things, the kind of things that become part of teenage culture. And you have to understand that's marketing. Marketers want you to stay young with lots of disposable income, irresponsible and stupid, so that they might sell you millions of dollars worth of products that, you know, that titillate you. That's what it's all about. And the great part is the marketing was done so well, and it's become so ingrained in our culture that it's so important. In child development classes, we talk about teenagehood, and we bring up this stuff. Of course, we measure it, and we say this is average. You know, teenagers play video games. Teenagers play out little sexual fantasies with each other. You know, and we give them the kind of tools so they can play out their little sexual fantasies safely, quote unquote safely. And child development doesn't help at all, because we take our measurement, we see this as being the average, and we encourage people to do this during their teenage years. Absolutely destructive, absolutely evil, absolutely stupid, but the science behind it is absolutely impeccable. If you are a strong proponent of child development. And we do. We come back, we go, oh, this is normal. You know, you'll see parents who have their hand to their forehead, shaking their head or with their head down amongst other adults, and swapping stories with their coworkers, for instance, over the crazy things that their teenager's doing, and they all look at each other and go, well, that's teenagers. And I say no. That's a mistake. To just simply accept that as acceptable behavior spells that, number one, your child is not growing up. Number two, there's a good possibility they will never grow up. Number three, you're coddling this by just your simple acceptance of it. Don't accept it. Don't let it happen. We want these people to take on adult roles. We want them to, you know, it isn't even a question of what we want them to do. They have to. They need to. I'll tell you one more thing that I do, and it's going to upset a lot of you. But I am going to use it because I think it's just absolutely vital. If your children go to college, and I don't want to discredit college for being something good, I tend to think of it more as a place to get a piece of paper, and hopefully you might learn something out of it, because by and large, college has kind of become party central. It is the featured way to take 15-year-old mentalities and encourage them to become 15-and-a-half-year-olds. But hopefully making $40,000 or $50,000 a year that marketers can take away from them by introducing them to PlayStation 3 and shelling out nearly $1,000 to basically do the same thing that they were doing when they were 15. There it is. Don't pay to send your kids to college. That is the most awesome way to make sure your child will never grow up. Is to pay their way through college. Don't do it. I'm not doing it for my kids. If nothing else, they can become good welfare recipients and go at least through the paperwork motions of, you know, having to seek money, maybe even seek a scholarship, even better, so that they can pave their own way through school. Number one, it builds confidence. Number two, it makes them feel like they're more adult, even though I have to say that whenever you mix government with anything, it's going to make people immature. But it at least gives you something. It's much better than just saying, well, I'll pay for your 4 years of college, and then you're on your own. It's like, no, you're just extending high school in kind of a sick way out 4 more years, and to top it off, you're not, you know, they're not around home. You can't really be part of that at all, although parents try. You know, parents try to extend their thing. I don't listen to Dr. Laura Schlesinger on the radio very often because of the people that call in. From being just dunderheads, which just bothers me. And the stupidest thing they do, I call it the Jerry Springer syndrome. I can't believe that these people, knowing that Dr. Laura is going to give them all kinds of crap, chew them up one side and down the other, they call in anyway. Oh, Dr. Laura, please tell me I'm a noble person. When she's going to tell you how childish you're being. Please tell me I'm doing the right thing. No, you're not. Wake up. Get it together. You know, I mean, Dr. Laura does more than that, but you could probably put together a pretty honest radio show, let people call in and just play a recording back that says, you're being a childish schmuck, grow up, stop behaving like that, you're being an idiot. And you can just play every time, you know, every time a person calls and says, this is my problem, just flip on that recording that says, you know, you're stupid, you're dumb, and you need to grow up. You need to stop behaving like that. And I think you could actually pull off a pretty decent radio show. Not that that's all Dr. Laura does. And I think she does a wonderful job. Sometimes I disagree with her, but not very often. I think she is on the front lines of childishness. Sometimes I wish she would actually come out and say it more often. Perhaps she has, and like I say, I don't listen to her very much, so maybe she does. But that's what it is. And it's child-centeredness, and that's the other reason why I get kind of upset at Dr. Laura, because she does. She ends up being very child-centered. I am the proud mother of a deployed U.S. Army paratrooper. Hoo-ah! And you're going, you know what? I never hear about the wonderful relationship between Dr. Laura Schlesinger and her husband. That never comes up. Much gets touted about how proud she is of her son. And why? Because I think she's child-centered. And although I think she does a pretty good job when it comes to these kind of things like relationships and things like that, I really wish she would do a better job of saying, here's... Perhaps she doesn't have a very good example herself, which would justify why she doesn't talk about it. But, honestly, God, it kind of makes me wonder, because she's so child-centered. You know, it's all about the kids, all about the kids, you know. You should leave your husband if he's doing one of these three things, or if you think it's, well, no, she doesn't talk about doing it because it's best for the children. That's typically a cop-out, and she's correct when she says that. It's almost always a cop-out. Well, I'm doing it because I'm doing it for my children. You go, shut up. I don't want to hear a word about your children. What I want to hear about is your husband abusive? Is your husband, you know, addicted? Is your I forget what the three A's are that she has that are good justifications for getting a divorce. Typically preluded happily with the fact that she says, boy, did you marry wrong. Boy, did you marry stupidly. I just wonder about what thought process you went through when you married this guy. Are you that desperate? You know, kind of stuff like that. Don't be child-centered. Don't center your life on your kids. Let me tell you how I explain it to my kids, and then I'm gonna close this off. Let me tell you how I do it. The first thing was that whole thing. Skip teenagehood. Worthless. Worthless, worthless, worthless. You're going to have to spend time later trying to mitigate all the crud, all the bad habits, all the stupidity, living down what you did when you were going through your teen phase. Skip it. Go straight from being a child to being an adult in training. That means as much as you can, as much as, unfortunately, government and society will allow, which I think is sick. I don't know why there's... I wish there weren't child labor laws, because I would start my kids working so much earlier. Because that's a primo part of adult life. How many people do we have that just never get down to having a work ethic? How many people do we get to that never just never get down to taking on an adult role? Because our society has gotten to the point to where it doesn't encourage it. It wants everybody to be teenagers and stay teenagers eternally. We come up with new ways to fight illnesses that are basically the result of teenage behavior. AIDS is the result of teenage behavior. You should call it the teen disease. You know? How much time and effort do we spend trying to make sure that kids can have unrestrained, free love type sex as much as they want without consequences? That's what all the time and effort and research on AIDS went to. That's, you know, all the venereal diseases, that's what all that stuff, all the research for that has gone through. I think if we put that much effort into something like cancer, we may have licked it. But we didn't. It was much more important that we keep people teenagers. Cancer isn't a teenage problem, therefore it's not anything worth getting into. It's funny. We really do. We encourage people to be teenagers forever. The children of our greatest generation, the ones raised by quote unquote the greatest generation, I'm sorry, I'm not willing to give them the appellation. I think they made some big, horrible mistakes for which we pay dearly today. Mistakes their parents did not, by and large, make. We have a growing number, you know. When they say the baby boomers are coming toward retirement, and we've got a whole ton of them, and we've got problems galore. I'm sorry, I'm getting off on this. I was supposed to be getting to the basic things I'm talking about. Number one, avoid teenagehood. Number two, don't pay for your kids' college. I don't care how expensive it is. Your kid, with some encouragement and motivation, with your encouragement, you can't motivate your kid. They have to motivate themselves. They'll do that. I find when you let your kid work for some time at menial labor jobs, which is what they can get, typically at 16, 17, 18, 19 years old, they will convince themselves that they want to go to college. And keep saying it. And said, you know, and be a good example yourself. I went to college. I make a crapper load lot more money than you do. And that sounds selfish and self-serving. And it's sad to say. I said, but, you know, but frankly, if you keep on the menial jobs, you won't be able to have the family life I have. You won't be able to have but maybe one or two kids, and you may regret and hate your kids because they are such a huge, immense drain on you. And they're not a huge, immense drain on me. Because I went to college. And I just, you know, and that piece of paper, I don't know why, don't ask me why, gets you so much more money. Probably because that's just the way it is. I don't know if it's right, but that's the way it is. Anyway, so those two things. There was a third. There was a third that was so vital, I hate to leave off here. But I'm to my destination. I need to stop. This is Jay Nemro. Childishness run amok in our society, perpetuated and enjoyed, but we're going to let that go. This is Jay Nemro, a long one, I apologize. We'll pick this up again. There's plenty to talk about on this thing. I'm going to try, you know, ultimately I'd like to try and work this into three different presentations, because I like being able to do that, because, you know, I kind of want to do weekends. I want to do stuff like that. Even if I'm part of a larger group and there's several sessions going on, I would like to be able to sponsor three or four different sessions that get talked about. Or to be able to chew up a lot of people's weekends. You know, it's Friday, we're going to do two sessions today. On Saturday, we're going to do two more sessions. And it can be an all Jay. Jay's brought in to do all this stuff with people. Anyway, this is Jay Nemro. You're listening to The Life Autistic. This is episode number 608 on, what do I call this? Childishness. Extending childishness. I forget what I called it. Extended childhood. That was John Taylor Gatto's thing. Anyway, this is Jay Nemro. Have a great day.